You're listening to Reality Sandwich Radio, where every Thursday at noon we serve up a palatable taste of the truth on topics of the mind, body, spirit, and our planet, community, and economy. To learn more about the Healthful Living model, go to healthfulliving.org. Reality Sandwich is hosted by Julie Matthews, Certified Nutrition Consultant, and Martin Matthews, Certified Medical Hypnotherapist. Past episodes of Reality Sandwich are available for free download at realitysandwichradio.com. Thanks for listening.
You are listening to KPOO San Francisco 89.5 FM. You've reached Reality Sandwich. I'm Julie Matthews, a certified nutrition consultant with Healthful Living. You can find out more about myself and my services at healthfulliving.org. And you can listen to any of our past Reality Sandwich shows at realitysandwichradio.com. Every Thursday at noon, we serve up a palatable taste of the truth on topics of the mind, body, and our planet. And this week, I have in Dr. Beverly Yates, who is a naturopathic doctor and an authority on natural medicine. She graduated in 1994 from the National College of Naturopathic Medicine in Portland, Oregon, and is also a graduate of MIT. She is the author of Heart Health for Black Women, A Natural Approach to Healing and Preventing Heart Disease. She's a member of several professional organizations. She has a private practice here in Northern California in Mill Valley. And I wanted to firstly welcome you to the show today, Dr. Yates.
Thanks so much. Glad to be here, Julie.
Great. And you may want to get a little closer to the microphone. I think it's a little hard to hear. But I'm so happy to have you on. And, you know, heart disease is one of those topics that, for whatever reason, women in general don't really think about. For some reason, we think of women's cancers, breast cancer, those types of things higher on the list. And I'm really glad to have you on to illuminate this for all of us, all people, as well as all women, and then particularly black women. So I'm looking forward to that today.
Great.
So firstly, I wanted to start with let's talk about heart disease for men and women and how that's different in terms of is it different between males and females?
Sure. It's one of the most surprising things I have to say in the course of my career to realize that something so basic that is number one in terms of what affects Americans' health and what kills us, the number one killer is cardiovascular disease. Most people don't know that. And it is an equal opportunity killer. It's both men and women are affected profoundly by it. And the sad thing is that it presents differently. So for those of us who are health professionals, it's kind of easy to overlook it in women because it doesn't show up the way we stereotypically think of it as in men. So we're kind of trained to think of men that way and not women. And on top of it, the women's symptoms that often show up don't match what the men's symptoms are.
And what are some of those differences?
One of the most straightforward differences is that for men, you think of like crushing chest pain, radiating down the left arm. You know, he collapses in a heap on the floor. And women's presentation with heart disease is not as dramatic. It's far quieter. It might be as simple as a change in how she breathes. And I'm not talking about asthma, but rather a sense, and women will report this before they have a major event, that there's an altered sense of breathing. And they may have pain that radiates elsewhere. Maybe it goes up towards the jaw or it goes elsewhere into the abdomen. They might start to feel anxious and a bit uncertain, and their whole sense of themselves really kind of shifts preceding an event, particularly a heart attack. And it often gets dismissed, and they often wind up with either antidepressants or anti-anxiety meds, neither of which is appropriate because that's not the problem.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is very interesting. Now, the classic symptoms we think of with the chest pain and the radiating down the arm, do those also happen for women, or is that really something that we don't see very much for women?
They can and they do, but it is nowhere near a one-to-one correspondence.
That's really fascinating.
Yeah, this often gets overlooked.
Yeah, when you hear about heart disease, you pretty much hear those symptoms all the time.
Yeah, TV shows certainly have, yes, pounded that one to death.
Yes, wow. And so, why do women want to be concerned? How does heart disease rate on the scale of diseases that are life-threatening for women?
Well, imminently, the sad thing is that by the time somebody figures out that heart disease is actually present, it's usually more advanced because it wasn't caught early. Why? No one did the screening. Or screening tests are inadequate. They aren't always done. Sometimes women, frankly, aren't listened to in the medical world, and this is not to bash or blame medical colleagues, not at all, But because there are docs and nurses who do a great job with this, but it gets missed too often. And by the time they find it out, serious damage has occurred, and it's not so easy to reverse that.
So what are, well, let's see. Where do I want to start? So there's a lot of things that people will think of or suggest to addressing heart disease. What can people do if they have a family history of heart disease and they haven't seen any manifestation, especially since you said it can be kind of quiet and people, I'm assuming it's probably good to not wait until you're experiencing major symptoms.
Yes, yes, that's true. It's good to not wait. One of the things that's best to do is to get screening tests done, go for annual exams, have your blood work, et cetera, and be aggressive, push. I've noticed that a lot of times women will often run a family's health plan. They'll make sure everybody goes to the dentist. They make sure everybody gets their eyes checked, gets their exams, et cetera. And unfortunately, for many of us as women, we're not even on our own lists when it comes for caring. It's going to everyone else. And there are times when women will push and ask for a test that, frankly, they shouldn't have to ask for. It should be routine. It's not. With a family history of cardiovascular problems, male and female in their family, and they still don't get the workup done. I'm just amazed at how often I hear this from women of all possible economic and educational strata. This is really an amazing, rampant kind of problem. We really got to, you know, get the word out the way the brilliance, I think, of the advocates for HIV and for breast cancer have done to really make public awareness there, because this is number one on the list.
Yeah.
It just is.
So let's talk about what that workup might consist of. I know that a lot of times we hear of cholesterol. Everybody's heard of cholesterol, and most people have gotten that checked at some point. What would this workup consist of?
Ideally, if I had my way, certainly we look at the cholesterol in the fractions. We want to know if they have the good guy cholesterol, the HDLs. We want to see those up. We want to see lower amounts of LDL and VLDL kinds of cholesterol. Those are the bad guys. Those are the ones that can go around and cause trouble and literally, you know, put holes or parking places in your blood vessel for cholesterol to park. If the blood vessels are in great shape, however much cholesterol you have in your blood, it isn't going to damage it. It only does it in the presence of what's called oxidation, which is often caused by stress, not eating foods in agreement, poor sleep. You know, basically their typical American lifestyle is what's doing us in.
And high sugar as well in the diet.
High sugar. High blood pressure, lots of salt, lots of refined kinds of flours and carbohydrates, and any more now, a chemical soup. You can often read the labels on products and not recognize anything in it. When I was little, you know, I remember reading labels for bread or for buns, things like that. It would probably say milk, sugar, butter, eggs, maybe salt. And you could say it, you could pronounce it, you could spell it, and you knew what it was. Now, it's all chemicals.
Yes.
Who knows what that is?
Right. Well, let's talk about that, because I've talked about that quite a bit on my show as a nutrition consultant. And for some reason, people assume because it's in the food product, it must be safe. So maybe you can give another perspective on why people should be concerned about these chemicals, even though they're all over the place.
The farther you move away from a food in its native state, the more work your body has to do to attempt to try to recognize it. Sometimes that's going to be okay, and sometimes it's not going to work so well, which means you overwhelm, you really burden your digestive system. It's actually meant to work without our attention, but many of us have routine, you know, gas, we have bloating, we have abdominal pain, we don't feel well, we've got headaches, we are cranky and irritable. And, you know, we don't even understand that we're poisoning our own bodies with foods that just don't agree. We're nicer to our cars. We pay attention to what kind of oil we put in. We change the oil in the engine for different motor weights, right, for the hot summer desert, let's say, or the Sierras if you go skiing in the winter. And you know you need a different kind of oil for your car if you want it to run well. Well, what do you think your body needs? Most people don't have that awareness, and it's really core. Food can be your medicine if you let it.
Wow, yeah, absolutely. Which is interesting because if you use the car analogy, we don't put many people recommend not even putting any oil in your car. In other words, fats are bad and all fats are bad. And that would be a problem as well.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about diet and food and nutrition as we go through this, because of course that's a topic of interest to me. So they might get a workup for cholesterol. What about things, homocysteine levels and other things like that, that in the past we thought it was all based on cholesterol, but now you're talking about oxidized stress and those types of things. What things might people want to look up on the internet or ask their doctor about, these other tests that aren't as common?
Yes, they might want to look up and have tests for homocysteine, and I'll spell it HOMOCYSTEINE. They might want to look up C, just the letter C, dash reactive, R-E-A-C-T-I-V-E, protein. and other things like it that can give you an indication of, think of it as an overall tendency or weakness towards inflammation. Mm. In the presence of some sort of an inflammation, if you want to think of it as an irritation or a fire, if you will, a misplaced fire in the body, not the kind of fire that drives your metabolism that's good for you, but the kind of fire that hurts.
Mm.
In the presence of those factors, they're kind of the accelerant to the fuel that can cause an awful lot of damage. They make a real big difference. It's like something that we would discuss later about the relationship between heart disease and diabetes. The presence of one makes the other worse.
Mm.
Those two you don't want to have at the same time. And if you do, you have to be really diligent and pay attention to your health and lifestyle and nutrition and other factors. And if you don't, you're going to have a much worse time. Mm. It doesn't have to be a hard time, but you do have to pay attention. You're not going to get a free ride on that.
Yes, yes. So let's talk about Black women, since your book is on heart health. Heart health for Black women, and I wanted to get a sense from you, do Black women have higher rates of heart disease than other populations?
Yes. When the publisher approached me and they asked me to write this book, I wasn't even aware of it, and I am a Black woman, so I was like, oh, this was an enlightening moment. The editor, another African-American woman, had talked to me at a conference, and I did some more checking, some more research, and I became alarmed when I saw this growing gap, and I thought, this is interesting. I wonder why, because I thought everybody was pretty much in the same soup. And it just seems to me that, unfortunately, for African-American women in this country, we seem to be more at risk for some really deadly stuff. And this is certainly in that category. And since it's the biggest, it's number one, you know, it's got the most attention. Some of it has to do, I think, with things that might be more upfront on people's minds, like probably racism and sexism. But that's not all.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it could be that I think as a group, we are particularly stretched thin. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of slack economically. Mm-hmm. For many of us, we're the first generation to go to college. And so we may be financially supporting multiple generations.
Mm.
We may be emotionally supporting multiple generations, depending on our personal circumstances. And if you are a sandwich person, in a sense that, you know, as I call the sandwich generation in a book, you might be a grandmother who is parenting children because your own children aren't able to function. So you're parenting your grandchildren at a time when you should be able to kick back a little bit and have some space, right? Or you might be a relatively, you know, middle-aged or not quite middle-aged person in their 30s, 40s, 50s, who is still taking care of their own children and who's now caring for your parents.
Mm.
Either way, you're sandwiched.
Mm.
You've got a layer above you and a layer below you that you're trying to care for. And as a result, ever more so, which is a tendency all women have, and certainly in the African community, this is a big deal, of looking and taking care of others and thinking well about them, but not yourself.
Mm.
I know for so many women, it's such a struggle just to go for a walk for 15
yes.
minutes.
Yes.
It seems like it's almost a blessing if they've got a stroller because they will at least get out with the baby in the stroller.
Yes.
But then once the children aren't in the stroller, now what? You know?
Yes.
Similarly, if someone is not physically so able and is in a wheelchair or on crutches or in a cane or whatever their mobility index might be, you know, all of these things are a factor. And it doesn't seem to matter how educated we are, what kind of jobs we have, money, income. It's just across the board. There's just a real gap. My perception, and I don't have any data on this piece, but it's just been my perception casually that we are about, as a group, African-American women in this country, I'd say 15 to 20 years behind in terms of our average health knowledge. In other words, in our community, it's very easy to go to a church function or some other community gathering and have people talking about how healthy they are by using margarine instead of butter.
Mm.
Now, for myself, as a naturopathic doctor, I'm alarmed because margarine is nothing but trans fats and it's bad.
Right.
From word one, that was just a bad idea. Mistake made in the 40s to even create that product.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to say things to people, they just look shocked. And I'm just like, oh, my gosh, what is it going to take to close this knowledge gap?
Right.
And this is with middle-class, well-educated Black women. We just don't seem to know this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So what can I say? There's some more work that needs to be done by myself and other colleagues. We gotta close this gap.
Yes.
There's no excuse for it.
Yes. Is just coming from that perspective, is there anything that we can do or that listeners can do if they are part of a community getting the word out? Are there groups that can, like, for instance, I work a lot with children, and so we have a nonprofit that goes around to schools and does education for parents about children's nutrition. Is there anything out there that you know of, or is it something that we need to create?
I had heard, and I'm relatively new to the community, I've lived here about 5 years, that there's a group of ambassadors, I believe, that are part of the Black United Front that are going around trying to advocate for health in forums where lots of African Americans are available and, you know, have a forum in which to disseminate that information. I'm not sure what the outreach is specifically to schools, necessarily to the parents, for the parents' health and nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad to know that you're doing outreach and you know the other ones for kids. But once people hit the adult years, certainly from college on, mm-hmm. I mean, I remember I used to eat in college. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yes.
I'm glad to still be here. So, you know, I think that it will just take that kind of grassroots effort. And I don't know if funding is available from other sources, not necessarily the FDA, what am I saying, but probably some other groups.
Right.
Might be a little more vested interest.
Right, right. I don't think the FDA has a big vested interest in that one. So, talking just about women in general, one of the things sometimes you hear about is hormone replacement therapy.
Yeah,
and even using that to assist with this heart disease piece. What are your thoughts on that?
I've always been very shy about prescribing hormones. In fact, in 12 years of practice, I, for the first time ever, prescribed hormones 3 weeks ago for
wow.
a patient. Just to give you an idea.
Wow.
And maybe because my toolbox as a naturopathic doctor is so broad and deep. You know, we've got nutrition, we've got herbs, we've got supplements, nutraceuticals, homeopathy, clinical nutrition, common sense, massage. We have so many ways to help people that I haven't needed to lean on it.
Mm-hmm.
This particular person was absolutely, completely correct indications for it. There was no shades of gray. Mm. I think it depends on who you are as a woman or a man, whether or not hormone replacement therapy of any kind makes sense. I'm not convinced from the data that I've seen that it is universally heart protective.
Mm.
And I think a woman really needs to be careful if she goes down the path of hormone replacement therapy, simply because at some point it seems like if you look at what's supposed to happen with menopause, Mother Nature expects our body to have a rest.
Right.
From the presence of so much of a dominance or an amount of estrogen and progesterone. It's supposed to drop off. And you then trade off what may or may not be a benefit for your heart in a protective sense for an increased risk, a very real and tangible one, for breast cancer and ovarian cancer.
Mm.
Well, to me, that's one heck of a trade-off.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that for many people, it's not a good one. They'd be far better off to get the physical exams, get the blood work done, make sure they handle their stress in their lives somehow, or if they have a wildly stressful event that, you know, through no one's fault, it just happened that way, that they recover as fast as they can, and that they stay in community, that they aren't isolated.
Mm.
Because isolation, emotional isolation, physical isolation, you know, a lack of touch, a lack of caring relationships, a lack of mattering in the world, a lack of feeling important, and, you know, just that sense of self-esteem does more damage, frankly, to health across the board, I think, than is appreciated. And we can't really measure that.
Right, right. So that's a good point. In the world of more energetic, emotional balance, when we think of the heart, right? When we think of love, we think of a heart, and we think of the heart. And when we look at Ayurveda or some of the things, when we think of the heart chakra, we think of love and that kind of thing. So you're talking about that kind of connection and bonding and caring. And is there a relationship between, do we either know through science or have you seen yourself, some relationship between really, truly the physical heart and the health of the heart and the health of our emotional heart?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've noticed, and there are studies that show this, that if people have pets, that if they are in community, that if they regularly participate in meditation, prayer, you know, things like that, their blood pressure drops.
Mm.
Now, that's a tangible measurement. Their heart rate slows.
Wow.
You know, and they feel good.
Yes. Which is, we always
should not
can
be
use
underestimated.
That. Yes, absolutely. So when we talk about heart disease, I'm assuming there are a couple pieces. We hear about cholesterol. We hear about high blood pressure. Can you put all of these either risk factors or causes or components together and explain what is really heart disease?
Heart disease is when your heart, for whatever reason, has to work too hard.
Mm.
It becomes less and less efficient at moving the blood around the body. So we're just going to use a more simplistic mechanical view, although it doesn't fully do the heart and the cardiovascular system justice. Let's just do that for clarity's sake. And as such, if it has to work harder at it, then things start to decompensate. And if you think about it, you know, if you're at home and you're cooking a meal and you forgot a few key ingredients, you start to get a little stressed about it, and then you're trying to put things together, and, oh, you know, the phone rang, and then, oh, you overcooked it. You know, the whole meal starts to become compromised, right?
Right.
It just starts to devolve from there.
Yes.
Okay. So heart health is kind of that same sort of situation, and there are many things that impact our heart health. Certainly how we feel and perceive ourselves in the world, our own sense of self-esteem, stress is really variable. I mean, I've seen people who've had strokes who had no other cardiovascular risk. You would never in the world think they'd have a stroke simply because they had a day where they were wildly angry.
Mm.
It changes your clotting profile. People don't know that. Anger changes how your blood flows.
Wow.
And so if you have a really big clot that way, you wind up with a stroke if you have really wild, unresolved anger.
Mm.
It's not worth it.
Right.
But if you don't know that,
mm-hmm.
right, and you get really enraged about something and you have that vulnerability that day, bang, now you've got a problem.
Wow.
And it might be a once-in-a-lifetime problem. You'll probably fully recover and you'll always be wondering, how in the world did I have that stroke?
Mm-hmm.
So that's one aspect. Another is exercise.
Mm.
Regular exercise. You know, as one personal trainer friend I'm getting to know says, the best exercise plan for you is the one you'll actually do.
Right. Exactly.
You know, and I always ask people, you know, when you were a child, what kind of exercise did you enjoy? I bet you didn't even think of it as exercise.
Right.
Did you like to jump rope? Did you want to, you know, go skating? Whatever it is, then that's what you should do.
Mm.
If you've got arthritis or something and your knees are bad, think about doing whatever it was in the water.
Mm.
Take the pressure off your joints, but have fun with it and make it so it's possible. If you live in a neighborhood maybe where it's not so safe to walk around, okay, great. If you can, get yourself to a shopping center,
mm-hmm.
someplace where there's a lot of people around, it's well lit, it's out of the weather, get in and out, do what you need to do. You know, make your life work. If you travel a lot, hotels usually have steps and stairs. If they don't have a true exercise room, walk up and down the steps. Go around the parking lot. When you're waiting in, I guess it wouldn't work with the security zone in airports, but it used to be. Once you get past security, you know, walk up and down the wings where the airplanes are. You know, just take advantage of whatever you've got.
Yes, absolutely. We always have this view that exercise needs to be something like aerobics or jogging, or most of those things people hate to do.
Yeah.
And then, of course, like you said, nobody does anything then, and it's better to do something than nothing. So
that's
I think
right.
That's a really good point there. So let's talk a little bit about cholesterol, because this is an important component, and it's also, I think, one of the pieces that has a lot of misinformation. So we did talk about it in terms of, you were talking about the importance of the good cholesterol and the bad cholesterol ratio and all of that. What are some of the misconceptions out there on cholesterol? Is eating cholesterol foods going to cause you to have high cholesterol or create heart disease?
Yeah, it's not that simple. It really isn't. There is not a one-to-one relationship between the consumption of cholesterol and what shows up in your blood. The deal with cholesterol, I think where people get confused, is that it depends on what your body is doing with the cholesterol that you eat.
Mm.
And specifically in the body, the liver is really the mediator. It's the broker for what happens with cholesterol. Mm-hmm. Most folks don't seem to know that cholesterol is the building block, if you will, the foundation, the substrate upon which all of your sex hormones are built.
Mm-hmm.
Without cholesterol, you will not have enough estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, and all of their cousins.
Mm-hmm.
DHEA, androstenedione, all of them. Mm-hmm. They come from cholesterol.
Which is interesting, because most of us are doing low cholesterol and then on Viagra instead. And you got to wonder, you know, what's going on. I mean, I know that's a little simplistic, but it is a factor, and we can't villainize cholesterol.
Yeah.
So continue.
Cholesterol is not the enemy. That's
right.
My take-home message.
Yes.
It's what your body is doing with it.
I always tell clients that about 75% of the cholesterol in your body you make yourself in your liver, and that only a small percentage comes from the outside. And if we get more from our food, then we just reduce the consumption that our own body makes.
Exactly.
When you do see that's always hard for me to convince people of, especially when their numbers are above 200, above 250 or something. And they'll then tell me that, I have a family history of heart disease, which might be true as well. What other factors might there be for somebody's cholesterol being so high other than cholesterol consumption?
What I've observed is sometimes cholesterol can elevate if there's an issue hanging out, sort of lurking in the background, if you will, with gallbladder dysfunction.
Mm.
The gallbladder, if you want to think of it again in a really simple view, is pretty much a baggie, a sack that concentrates bile that comes out from the liver. And it's not an optional organ. It's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
You want it there, because when fat in a concentrated amount from a meal goes by, you want that bile to come out
mm-hmm.
and help, you know, to mix with and emulsify, the formal word, the fat, so you get the benefit from it. So the nutritive value that the fat has. So fat in and of itself, I personally don't think should be avoided, particularly for heart health. You want quality fat, not quantity fat.
Mm.
You know, so lard, hydrogenated fats, margarine, they're not your friends.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care who's marketing what. They're just not, from a nutritional biochemical point of view. They don't do anything useful for you. Gums up the cell walls. And that means for each and every cell of your body, it makes it harder for the good stuff, the nutrients, the food, to get in, and harder for the waste products and junk to get out. Well, now, who wants that? If you're going to do spring cleaning at your house, you're not going to bar shut all your doors and windows, park the trash there, and then expect it to magically fly through the wall. Of course not, right? Well, right. That's what you're doing to your cells when you eat those kinds of fats.
Right.
You want the essential fatty acids, you know, from nuts and seeds. Those are great.
Mm-hmm.
Very health-giving. And it's one of those things that when a person has enough of those balance of good quality fats, they usually don't want the poor quality stuff.
Yes.
It tends to make them sick. They gag. They see that their tongue is coated. Mm. They don't feel good. They're burping. Mm-hmm. And other symptoms we're not going to get into details with. But, you know, you get the idea. Mm-hmm. Routinely, when I get people onto that quality food program, they just say, oh, I don't even want it. You know, I drove by the fried food emporium, I'll call it that, and I didn't even want it. Or I haven't been there in 2 years, and I stopped in the other day kind of feeling nostalgic, and I thought I'd have some fried chicken or deep fried French fries or whatever it was.
Right.
And they're like, oh, man, I was sick for 3 days.
Ooh.
It wasn't even fun. And
yeah.
I just smile. No, I got them then.
Right, exactly. Let's talk a little bit more about that, because I really love that topic of fats. And you mentioned hydrogenated fats and how those are the trans fats we always hear about. And they are man-made, and they are very stiff, rigid fats. And like you said, they get stuck in the cell wall and make it very difficult for nutrients and all sorts of things to get in and out of the cell. And I just want to – you also mentioned quality of fat. And so I wanted to back up in terms of animal fats for people out there, that I definitely agree, if you are going to your favorite fast food restaurant and they're frying your French fries in, – 2-day-old lard, that's not going to be a healthy thing. However, there are times where animal fats, whether it's a really high-quality milk or cheese source, if it's a good quality animal fat, I'm talking about beef that is pasture-raised, where you've got higher levels of CLA, DHA,
it's
vitamin A, the good fat.
It's normal fat.
And you're having it in moderation, then those are the fats that we're talking about keeping. So I have this little pet peeve about people automatically dumping saturated fat in the same category with trans fats, because as we were talking about earlier, of course, it's also the quality and the quantity and the ratio with the other fats. And so I think it's important to mention a lot with nuts, like you said, because a lot of us don't eat them. And if we do, we eat the, you know, Planters roasted, salted.
Candied nuts.
Yes. So I think that's important so that people will start to balance out some of the ratios of fat. But I think to villainize any one group of fats is doing a disservice to all of us. A little moderate amounts of healthy fats in all the different categories. And then, of course, the only one that I would consider unhealthy would be the man-made fats, like you said, those trans fats. So for people listening, that's margarine, like you mentioned earlier, and then all of the commercial mayonnaise, commercial peanut butter, the sugared kids' peanut butters, which always amazes me that we feed those to kids. A lot of the really fried foods, things like that, are going to have a lot more of the trans fat. So avoid those, and then get your other fats in some nice balanced ratios, and I think that you'll do a lot for your health and your energy and your heart health as well.
And that's the key element, what you're talking about, balance.
Mm-hmm.
As a culture right now, we are so sadly out of balance. My goodness.
Yes.
We are really lead very strange, skewed lives.
Mm-hmm.
And because people aren't balanced, then, you know, all kinds of things start to break and show up as problems that, you know, shouldn't be. We should have more resilience, more bandwidth, if you will, headroom.
Yes.
And we don't. Many people are emotionally and physically walking a tightrope.
Yes.
And one little nudge, and now this all of a sudden, all of a sudden I got like, no, you didn't. That started 20 years ago.
Right. Yes.
This did not happen overnight.
Right. And that imbalance, that's really, you reminded me of something you said earlier, which I think is good to point out. When people are, I will say, addicted to things like potato chips and French fries and fried foods, it's not because you love fat more than others or you don't have willpower or something. It's because your body is starving for the healthy fats.
That's right.
And you're not getting the healthy fats. So it thinks, well, this is the most concentrated form. I'm going to crave these fried and high fat foods. So if that's the case, switch to some good fats and you'll, like you said, notice that your cravings for the other bad fats will most likely go away.
That's right. That's why I think so many people, particularly during the holiday season, have so much digestive distress.
Yes.
Because they're eating such a quantity of food. It's poor quality, perhaps made with love, but it may not be in agreement with them.
Mm-hmm.
And because something works well for me nutritionally, it might not work well for you or
exactly.
our neighbor across the street or whatever. We really aren't the same. And there's a lot to be said for that, honoring the individual in terms of our actual physiology, our actual biology. Mm-hmm. We really have some variances that we have to pay attention to.
Absolutely. So what are, for people, let's say that they do have some high cholesterol, they're, let's say they are savvy, and so they're eating a few eggs, and they're eating a little bit of cholesterol, but it's all good, high quality. Their numbers have come down somewhat, but they still seem to be having some cholesterol issues. What other types of natural things can people do to reduce their cholesterol? And then my second piece to that is, why would they not want to just take a pill that would lower their, like, I have a client right now who had, you know, cholesterol in the 200s. He's now taking a cholesterol lowering medication. He's at about 135.
Ooh.
And which,
there's
which
such a thing is too low.
Yes. I was going to say, well, some people would think that that's really like lower, the better there. That is not necessarily true. And his good cholesterol is very low. It's like 35. So actually let me back up and start with, why would you not just want to take some of these pills firstly?
Well, now there's a topic. We can spend 5 hours on that one. The medicines that are used to lower cholesterol in general very much deplete the body of the very nutrients it needs to help manage cholesterol.
Mm.
This would include the B vitamin family. This would include coenzyme Q10 and other kinds of nutrients that are specific for the cardiovascular system and particularly the management of cholesterol and how the liver even deals with it to begin with.
Mm.
Also, the liver as an organ has both a digestive function along with a detox function. And if it is deficient in what it needs to do its job, then it's kind of a question of where your weak link is where your problem's going to show up.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a detox issue, then it means if you drink a glass of alcohol or you get a strong burst of fumes from a diesel engine, you're probably going to be feeling more sick than someone else
mm-hmm.
who might be able to breathe that stuff in and out, and in an hour they're back to normal. They're good.
Right.
Whereas it might be a few days, you know, banging around in your system causing trouble.
Mm.
For cholesterol in and of itself, people should always keep in mind, this is something a lot of people don't know, is that more than half the people who actually have heart attacks, they have normal cholesterol.
Mm.
So in and of itself, cholesterol really is not the enemy. I'm just going
right.
to keep saying that.
Good, good.
Depends on what your body's doing with it. Exercise can help lower it. Lots of fiber in the diet. Whether it's vegetables, our friends' vegetables. There's no such thing, I think, as too much vegetables. I
right.
think that's kind of safe to say.
Yes.
You and I could probably agree
yeah, we,
on that.
Yeah, we agree definitely.
We're on the same page on that one. If you can't, I shouldn't say can't. If you're choosing not to eat enough vegetables, you can take fiber products. But fiber is your friend when it comes to blood sugar management and cholesterol management.
Mm-hmm.
It makes a real difference.
Mm-hmm.
You get a 2-for-1 benefit on that one. There are nutrients like there's polycalcinol, there's various of the B vitamins, there's cardioprotective herbs like hawthorn, there's magnesium as a mineral, there's lots of things that are available. There's some products that have it available as a combination or as separate items. It's one of those things where people often will leave the store with, you know, a bag full of stuff when really they could probably get 1 or 2 combo products and get the job done with getting their cholesterol down. There's some that have even been studied to show that are natural
mm-hmm.
To reduce the amount of overall cholesterol and, more importantly, frankly, boost the amount of the good guy, the HDL.
Mm-hmm.
For every 1% you increase HDL in a woman, you get a 3% drop in her risk of a serious heart event.
Wow.
In a man, for every 1% you boost the good guy, HDL cholesterol, you get a 2% decrease in his risk of a serious cardiac event. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, the focus should be on boost the HDL. So for
yes.
your client who's got numbers at 135 for overall total cholesterol and the good guy is so low,
right.
for him, I'd be far more worried about the low HDL.
Yes.
To get that up. And I think that the overall cholesterol number should go up.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen people show up with things like kidney cancer, other kinds of problems who have super low cholesterol. There's a range in which you want your cholesterol. It's probably more like 170 to 200,
mm-hmm.
maybe 165 to 200. Super low cholesterol is not your friend at all, because you do need enough in your body for good things to happen.
Yes. That's really important. Now, are there particular foods or particular ways to boost the good cholesterol? I know eggs have some good HDL. Is that one good way? Are there other particularly good foods for that? Or
depending on who you are, as long as your liver function is normal, it's fine to have eggs.
Mm-hmm.
You can even have I remember one friend, as a family, they had familial hyperlipidemia.
Mm.
So their cholesterol numbers were routinely in the 600s.
Wow.
And, you know, I always thought, because I remember the patient voiced this, that he was afraid to be in the cold weather because he thought he was going to just like turned into stone because he thought his blood was just so full of fat, you know? And I have to say that food needs to be done in conjunction with other things like the exercise, like the fiber. So food really rich with vegetables, which gives you the fiber, that's fine. The good quality fats. But the people shouldn't live in abject terror of a number on a piece of paper.
Yes.
It needs to be taken with the overall picture in mind. You know, is their blood sugar regulation normal? If they're not heading towards or in diabetes, either type 1 or type 2, then that's one big, good.
Right.
You know, do they have hypertension? Is that a factor or not? Have they had a stroke? Are there any family histories of strokes? Do they have normal clotting regulation? Are there any issues, any abnormalities there? There's all kinds of possibilities in that realm. How are they doing in terms of regular exercise that they actually enjoy and can sustain? All of those things are a factor. How are they doing in community and in isolation? When you put together the big picture that way, it becomes much clearer who's more likely to have trouble and who might need more protection, whether it's with a pharmaceutical intervention or with natural interventions, or perhaps they just need to, like, get their life together.
Yes. And I think that's a good point you bring up. It's not just a number on a piece of paper. We need to look at the overall person. Do they feel healthier now? You know, those types of things. So for people just tuning in, you are listening to KPOO San Francisco, 89.5 FM, and you're listening to Reality Sandwich. I'm Julie Matthews, and we have Dr. Beverly Yates on, and she is with naturalhealthcare.com. You can find her there. And let's talk some more about heart disease. Let's talk about high blood pressure. We haven't talked a lot about that yet. So what high blood pressure, especially when it runs in families, is there anything people can do? Should they turn to medications? Should they turn to natural approaches? What might be a first step for somebody?
A first step, and frankly, it can be the most difficult step, is to figure out why they have the high blood pressure. In the medical world, it's called essential hypertension. And, you know, if you look at the word, the vocabulary around it, it's just kind of curious because a lot of times the actual cause is never identified. You don't know if it's coming from, let's say, poor kidney function, which would be important to know. You don't know if it's coming from the fact that perhaps they're eating foods that are causing a lot of bloating, extra retention of water, of edema, swelling, and therefore there's more fluid to manage. You know, so of course there's more blood pressure because the heart has to work harder to push all that stuff around. Is the person grossly overweight? If they're obese, that's a factor. There's ever that much more poundage to try and get all the nutrients around to and collect all the waste from.
Right.
There's that much more work for the heart to do. Another factor for high blood pressure sometimes can be stress. If people are chronically stressed, their adrenal system, which can be, you know, life-saving, it's supposed to be, as fight or flight, might be constantly engaged. They've always got their foot on the accelerator, so to speak, and never on the brakes. So you have to work with them to get their parasympathetic calm system back on board and in charge, because a person should not be in a, constantly in a fight or flight state. This is not good. The body was not designed for that. The chemicals that are released are amazing. This is when you hear these stories where somebody has been able to lift a car off someone. You just hear these incredible stories. Well, that's what it's there for. Or to run, like, you know what, quick.
Yes.
In a danger. In the absence of that, though, and you're sitting, let's say, behind the wheel of a car in traffic and you're having a road rage moment. Oh, this is so not good for anybody. Bad idea.
Yes.
And it hurts your blood vessels. It nicks them. It makes little divots in them, which makes it more likely than if you have cholesterol that's been oxidized, the LDLs, VLDLs, by what? Stress, which kind of lit the match here. Think of the cholesterol in that case, the bad kind, as a fuel. Now it's going to park in these little holes that were created by the chemicals released from stress. This is where atherosclerosis, those atheromas form. And as a result, then, you become more at risk for clots. You have reduced blood flow. Everybody, the whole body has to work harder to get all that stuff moved around. It's not good.
Wow. Well, I suppose the positive piece to all of this is that stress is one of those things that you can work with very well by some very easy, inexpensive relaxation, exercise, meditation, whatever that is for you, and that can really make a huge difference. So that's nice. We don't have to necessarily be running out for pharmaceuticals or other fancy interventions for the stress piece. But it is really essential, like you just mentioned, to really pay attention. We all have stress. And so to pretend that we shouldn't have any or something is, of course, not realistic, but to how to manage it is a really important thing to consider.
That's the key. You got to have a plan for that. And sometimes people need specific nutrients, or they need an action plan, or sometimes both, to calm down the stress factor and to make sure that their sleep is normal and that they're getting enough. Many of us are chronically sometimes, frankly, sadly, by choice, sleep deprived.
Yes.
A lot of people go to bed around 11 o'clock midnight, and then they're popping back up at 5:30, 6 o'clock, and they're exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not good for anything about your health. We really do need enough rest.
Right.
You watch a young child, their sleep pattern is more like 11 or 12 hours for the youngest ones.
Mm-hmm.
And then as you get older, it pretty much goes to 8 or 9 hours a night. Most people feel awake, refreshed.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't awake refreshed, I tell you right now, something's out of balance,
because
you should awake refreshed.
Yes.
And then as you get older, like say in your 70s or so on up, you need less sleep. It's very typical for our elders to have sleep patterns more where they sleep like about 6 hours or so, maybe a little less a night, and they feel great when they wake up.
Mm-hmm. Which I always find funny. So you finally get time to sleep and you don't need to sleep now. So I want to just tell people about this naturopathic medicine and naturopathic doctors, because you were mentioning a lot of these pieces of lifestyle and nutrition and health and food and looking at a holistic person. So you look at the cholesterol and the effects and all of these different body systems. And I find that often if we go to a traditional doctor, we will have a cardiac doctor, and we'll have an endocrinologist, and we'll have a primary doctor, and nobody really talks and nobody explains how these pieces are all actually really related. And so that's what I really love about naturopathic medicine. So for people that this concept is new, talk about what was your training? What do naturopathic doctors do that's different?
Okay. We are trained as primary care doctors. We offer to people the ability to be their family practice, general practice, primary care, front lines kind of doc. There are those of us who specialize, let's say, in gynecology or diabetes or midwifery, whatever it might be. But for many of us, we like being generalists, and our toolbox is broad. Our first 2 years, we learn the basic medical sciences like anatomy and pathology and biochemistry and physiology, just like you would expect medical doctors do. At the same time, in all of the schools currently in the U.S. and Canada, we start in the clinic in our first year as a helper. Mm-hmm. So we start with patient contact right up front.
Mm-hmm.
And we learn about people in their actual lives, not their idealized ones or the ones they feel like they can't possibly cram into a 7 to 10 minute visit.
Mm-hmm.
So typically a first visit might be more like a half hour to an hour, depending on what the initial problem is someone comes with and its complexity. Because sometimes, frankly, people come to us as a court of last resort. And as such, by then, they've seen everybody, been everywhere, done everything. And they're often shocked when they find out what a broad way in which we can help them.
Mm.
Our therapies are non-toxic. They're safe. Many of them have been well-proven, often in the world of conventional medicine, which is really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you're working with things that are nutritive by their nature, like herbs, like supplements, and nutrition as a core in our toolbox, you know, we've got like lots of disciplines in our toolbox, but I would say that's our center. And we listen to the person and how they actually live and say, okay, how can I construct a treatment plan that works for you? Like for myself as a family practice doctor, I'm always asking, how are the other members of your family doing? Because I know that person's not living by themselves.
Yes.
And I know if I set up a plan that they can't ever execute on, or that the other family members are going to sabotage, I've done them no favor.
Mm-hmm.
We've wasted time and money now.
Mm-hmm.
So what's real? And I always talk to people, it's like, you know, are you going to do this?
Right.
It's one of the things I love about my older patients, because they'll tell me right off, forget it. Or, yeah, I'm going to do this. Or, I never thought of that. Or, I thought of that years ago. Or, my aunt used to do that. Or whatever it might
mm-hmm.
be. And so that exchange, you know, it's like we're more trying to be their advocate.
Mm-hmm.
And not so much the thou shalt do it.
Right.
But rather, here's a whole spectrum of possibility. What's going to be the best fit for you? Oh, that didn't work so good? We have like 12 other things we could do.
Right.
So we really tune in on the person rather. So we're treating the people rather than the disease. I think that's the biggest distinction.
Yeah. And one of those pieces to that, what I love about naturopathic medicine is that there might be an indirect way to approach something that's even potentially better than a direct way. So we were talking about cholesterol. So we could take a pill and we could artificially lower that cholesterol number, which we talked about earlier, may not be doing that person a service. Or we could look at the role of diet, or, you know, maybe for the high blood pressure, it's the role of stress. Or so it might be something that the person isn't, I take pill A to get this effect, but I'm working on digestion so that I can digest my fats better, so that I can have more well-rounded, you know, energy for the cells or whatever those types of things are. And so sometimes there's a few simple lifestyle changes or things balancing all the body systems that really are so supportive for the heart, instead of just focusing on what are those heart health things. That's one of the things that I think is really wonderful.
Thank you.
And a lot easier, I think, for people to do because they may have been working on this, say, cholesterol issue with diet for a long, long time, but they haven't even considered that stress might be a factor or that their exercise might be an influence. You know, you go to the regular doctor and they say, eat right and exercise. And nobody ever knows what that means.
They don't know what it means.
And they don't know how to do it. So that's great. How can people find out more about you?
They could go to my website, www.naturalhealthcare.com. That's all one word. They're always welcome to call the clinic. Mm-hmm. We're at Naturopathic Family Health Clinic in Mill Valley. That number is 415-381-4600. And I have two other doctors who've just joined me there. And next year, I'll probably add on another two docs because we're really growing and good things are happening.
Wonderful.
And one of the joyful things that happens is like I'll give you a thumbnail sketch.
Great.
Somebody can come in, let's say, with poor sleep. They have a dropout of sleep in the middle of the night. They are tired, they're wired, and they have really bad cholesterol and they've got high blood pressure. You send them in. Okay, you say, great, let's do a screening panel on you for blood, and we look and we see, oh, you know, it was fasting panel, and we see their glucose is also elevated, so their blood sugar's up. Okay, we got some work to do here.
Yes.
And, you know, you do some other tests, you listen to them, you know, do a physical exam, check them out, and you realize, you know what? There's one or two systems here that are in disarray. Like one patient the other day, actually, it seems like her adrenal glands are flip-flop. So she's waking up when she should be going to sleep and vice versa.
Mm.
It's as if she were on shift work, but she's not on shift work. She's just really stressed, and her adrenal system has decompensated. It's trying to run the show, and it can't really. It's kind of confused right now.
Right.
So what we can do with natural items is reestablish that normal circadian rhythm.
Mm.
Get the adrenals back online when they're supposed to be online around 7, 8 a.m. in the morning. You should see a rise in your body's cortisol.
Mm-hmm.
Then in the evening around 7, 8 p.m., that should drop. That lets you relax and want to go to sleep.
Mm.
All kinds of things straighten out when you get that settled. And so I always tell people, let's go for the essence as best we can for the things that are probably related. Work on that, and then let's see what's left.
Mm-hmm.
And then when people come back and they're smiling, they're feeling better, they're more in charge, they're like, oh, and I didn't know that. Oh, and I found out. And it's just a wonderful way to work with people. I feel
yes.
like I have the best job in the world. Lucky me, you know?
Yeah, and you can tell by your talking about it, too, which is so wonderful. So what types of other clients do you see in your practice and your clinic? What if someone wanted to come see you and maybe heart disease isn't their thing, what types of patients do you usually see?
Usually I see people who have some combination of what we call the allergy triangle or the atopic triad. So they may have allergies or asthma or eczema. Usually they have two of those three legs. I see a lot of that. I see people with all kinds of digestive problems, whether it's constipation, heartburn, unexplained bloating, general misery, or their gut just hurts, you know, or their symptoms are just all over the map. They alternate with constipation and diarrhea. And I think people are having more awareness now with celiac disease in its presence, or some people just have an intolerance to grain.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the gliadin fraction of the gluten in wheat. It's just grains. They just don't agree with them. Again, biochemical individuality. There it is.
Yes.
That's a great example, the whole grain issue. So I don't think people need to live in terror of carbohydrates. But, if you can digest it well, then it agrees with you. And if you can't, then it doesn't. And, reading it in a book is just not quite the same. You know what I'm saying? It's
yes.
individual. And within families, those vary. Other things we help people with could be diabetes. It could be cancer support. There's lots of people who have gone through sometimes multiple rounds of cancer regimens in terms of treatments and who are extremely depleted and aren't sure now what to do. And that depletion leaves them far more vulnerable to other kinds of very serious, equally serious health problems.
Yes.
Whether it's their heart, literally it's been damaged depending on the medication we're talking about or other things. And it's the part of the story that the person needs to know. So when they're making that choice that they know, okay, great, I've survived this bout with the cancer. Now what do I do to get the rest of my health back?
Yes.
Because what a trade-off to be in such a precarious position. Mm-hmm. You know, I really have a lot of empathy, a lot of compassion for people in that situation. Certainly people with stress, sleep, mood stuff, depression, anxiety, they're not quite sure what's wrong. They're not feeling right. People who are fatigued, people who feel like their body is betraying them. I remember an email I got from one friend last year. She had just turned 40, and part of her email said, and I quote, "Turning 48 for sissies." It cracked me up because I thought, that's an interesting way to put that. Because she felt like, it had something to do with her age. And I'll tell you, age is overblown.
Mm.
It depends on who you are. Just like a candle burns at a different rate,
yes,
depending on the quality of the wax of the candle and the wick, so too we burn our bodies, our spirits, our psyches at different rates. Some of us are burning both ends of that candle.
Yes.
Real fast. Some people in the celebrity world, you know who they are. And then there's other folks who, they're probably going to live long and live well.
Yes.
They're doing a lot of things right. So when those surprises, those stresses, those shocks come across in life, they'll weather the storm.
Mm-hmm.
It won't totally, blow them off their center.
Yes. Well, Dr. Beverly Yates, thank you so much for being on today.
Thank you. I'm delighted to have this opportunity. I appreciate it, Julie.
Absolutely. So if you want to get in touch with Dr. Yates, you can find her at naturalhealthcare.com. And you have been listening to Reality Sandwich on KPOO San Francisco, 89.5 FM. And just one more time, actually, for anybody that's listening and didn't get her contact information the first time, her number is 415-381-4600 and naturalhealthcare.com. You can also email them at clinic@naturalhealthcare.com. If you want to get this show for anybody in your family or friends or any of our past shows, you can download them all for free on our website, which is realitysandwichradio.com. If you want to learn more about my services or healthful living in general, you can go to healthfulliving.org. So stay tuned every Thursday at noon for Reality Sandwich, a palatable taste of the truth on topics of the mind, body, and our planet. Thanks for listening.
I know you done planned your program, but could you do this for me? Yeah. Under the massive in the